but I've seen this episode and still love the show. That's Taylor Swift. I'm Blake Murphy, and this is Jays Talk Plus. Just 19 games in, it does feel like an episode you've seen of this Blue Jays team before. They are 10-9. They're coming off a 6-3 homestand. They're coming off a five-game stretch where the turn through the rotation posted a 1.59 ERA. They're also 22nd in home runs. They're also in the 20s in runs scored. They're having a little trouble with runners in scoring position. Stop me if you have heard any of this before. There is something to be said for familiarity and consistency. There's also something to be said for, hey, we're 19 games into 162, but it feels like we know where this team's strengths and, more importantly, where the holes are, where the areas they'll need to address over the next 143 are as well. They're largely the same holes that were there last year. Not to be too negative, it's a fun series coming up. It gets going in San Diego this weekend. Awesome matchup to start things off tonight at 9:40. Yariel Rodriguez will make his second career major league start, going up against Matt Waldron, the knuckleballer. Yes, we have a knuckleballer back in Major League Baseball. He throws it about 36% of the time. Should be a lot of fun. San Diego's a fun team in general. You get Fernando Tatis, what's left of Xander Bogaerts at this point. A lot of fun stuff there. We'll talk to Kyle Glazer, formerly of Baseball America, now at MLB.com, about the Padres side of things a little later in the show. Right now, though, we're joined by one of our regulars, but for the first time this season, one of my favorites, Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic. Caitlin, good morning. How are we doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I led off the top there by kind of saying that this feels a little familiar where the Blue Jays are right now. And I don't mean that in a negative or a positive way. It just feels like within a 20-game window here, they've settled into who we expected them to be and largely who we knew them to be the last couple of years. Is that how it feels for you on the a little more on the inside as well?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, to start out with, the starting pitching was slightly shakier than we thought it would be. Basically, their first, like, turn or two in the rotation, but that's kind of straightened itself out. And, you know, the bullpen's been relatively strong, you know, last game not included. And yeah, like, it still seems like they're shaking out to be a team that is probably going to be led by their starting pitching. That's no surprise. They brought back essentially the exact same starting rotation, or at least the top four guys that we saw mostly last year, and they're still the top four guys this year. Obviously, the fifth, Yariel Rodriguez, is in there right now. Maybe Alec Manoah is going to be in there at some point. They tried with Adam Francis, didn't quite work out. So it's not really surprising, I guess, that it feels familiar, because it's basically the same team. I mean, they made a few adjustments in the lineup. Obviously, Matt Chapman's gone. They bring in IKF. They add Justin Turner instead of Brandon Belt. But, like, the core of the team is the same. And the whole kind of premise about this year was that essentially they're running it back with the same group, hoping for different results. Now, whether that's, you know, a fair strategy, I guess we have to wait and see. On the surface, you could kind of understand why the Blue Jays front office would do that, because you look at the numbers that a lot of the guys put up last year and they were below their career norms. You know, someone like Vlad, you know, he can do better. Someone like Dalton Varsho, you kind of were disappointed in what he was producing last year. Springer didn't have the year that he wanted to. And so you're looking up and down the lineup and you're thinking, the guys that we have, we believe in them and we think they can do better. And so that's kind of what they did. Their approach, when they lost out on Shohei Ohtani, was let's just double down on who we have. And so right now we're just kind of seeing that group do the same thing, which maybe they will produce better in the long run. Obviously, it's still a very small sample size, and the additions that they may have worked out. I think IKF has looked really good in the homestand. Justin Turner, obviously one of the few Blue Jays players that is hitting with runners in scoring position when he gets that opportunity. Dalton Varsho has looked really good on the last couple of games, and so maybe he is doing what the Blue Jays thought he would do, and obviously producing better than he did last year. But then another few guys kind of look the same. George Springer, pretty similar to last year so far. Vladdy, very similar to last year, more or less. Bo's not off to the best start. And so, you know, you look at up and down the lineup and you think the team can do better, but also we've seen this before, and maybe we're just kind of seeing last year play out all over again.
Yeah, and maybe they'll tweak, around the margins ahead of the trade deadline. Maybe they'll do something more significant, depending on where they are. We have months that I have to save that for, although my instinct is always to bring up things they could address right now. And then obviously there are some fun things like, by the way, Aroldis Martinez homered again yesterday at AAA, and they have a couple outfielders hitting well there, but nothing, that probably changes the material outlook on the lineup side. Bigger picture, having one of the best rotations in baseball, that's a pretty good thing to hang your hat on initially and build from. So let's take a look at the starting rotation and where they're at right now, Caitlin, because you've written about a couple of these starters during this 10-game homestand here. 1.59 ERA last time through the rotation, and that included a nice bounce back from Kevin Gausman on Wednesday against the Yankees. Just five innings, but much better in terms of swing and miss. In terms of pitching to a Yankees team that we know historically does a decent job laying off of his splitter and things like that. I know you wrote about it, but for anyone who didn't catch that piece at The Athletic, what did you see from Gausman? What did Gausman see from Gausman that should have us thinking, hey, he's probably figured it out here after the kind of delayed start to the season he had?
Yeah, I think that the kind of takeaway from that was the mix was better. I think that it was John Schneider that said against Colorado, Gausman might have got a little bit splitter happy, and they were kind of seeing that pitch well. And I think he had a better mix when it came to the Yankees. I think that he was more aggressive and just attacking them better. Yes, he still had, I think, three walks, but which is kind of high for Gausman, honestly. But he still was kind of mowing down their lineup, and obviously a very tough lineup. And he was just attacking them a lot better than I think he did against Colorado, probably placing his pitches a little bit better. So he just looked a lot more like himself, honestly. I think that, yeah, the Yankees did a good job at driving his pitch count up. There were some long at bats, some full counts, fouling off some pitches. But I think ultimately you come away from that start and thinking that hopefully the sort of wobbly period where you're kind of chalking up to the fact that it's basically his spring training. Obviously, he didn't get a full spring training. He was sidelined for most of it with the shoulder soreness or shoulder fatigue or whatever they were calling it. And he basically got into the one spring training start, and the first like three starts of his season were essentially him still kind of working through things. Basically, he was on a pitch count, all this kind of stuff. So you hope that, normally a pitcher works through some of those things in spring, and he didn't have the chance to do that. And obviously he took it well. He's a professional. You kind of trust him. I get why the Blue Jays made that decision. Ultimately they weathered it. He had a good start against Tampa, looked good against the Yankees. So you hope that now he's just kind of going to cruise and get back to Gausman, who is probably, one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Yeah, until they run into the Minnesota Twins, whenever that is, who for, reasons, mystery, have him figured out. It's nice to see that. Jose Berríos, Chris Bassett, obviously very steady forces in this rotation at this point. Someone else you wrote about this week, and I know it was a co-piece with Vlad had that really strong game on Tuesday as well, but Yusei Kikuchi has been probably their best pitcher overall so far. We have seen glimpses of this from Kikuchi over his 2 years in Toronto, over his time in Seattle, like the half season where he earned an all-star berth while he was in Seattle. But this level of consistency, this level of depth into the games, the way John Schneider is talking about Kikuchi after games, is this the best version of him that you've seen in his time in Toronto?
I think so. I think that it's been a process with Kikuchi. I think the first year that he was with the Jays, it was kind of about getting him to accept change. And I think that he in the past had been sort of a guy that resisted change and could be a little bit stubborn or was just a little afraid to try new things, put his trust in a new team that they can, help him. And so that first season with him, it was sort of all about like gaining that trust with him, showing him that, he can be better with a different mix or a different approach or a different strategy, however you want to put it. And I think last year was all about sort of seeing the signs of that, like seeing him, he had the curveball and it's working much better for him with paired with the slider, and obviously his fastball is a really good pitch. And so last year you were seeing, yes, there were still some ups and downs, but I think there were more ups and downs last year, and it was overall a really good season. I think it was a career year for him in terms of ERA, and I think innings pitched as well. And so ultimately you feel good and you feel like last year he really broke through in the sense that he was more comfortable. He came out of his shell a little bit. He was, every start he would get more confident, you know, showing those emotions on the mound, opening up a little bit, all that kind of stuff. And I feel like year three with him is like, it's all just like come together where he's fully bought into the Blue Jays strategy. He's confident. He's comfortable. He's, you know, one of the focal members of the team, honestly. And I think that he's added the changeup this year, which is still a pitch that, you know, he's not using a ton, but it is a secondary weapon for him. And he knows exactly how to use the curveball and the slider and to use that. Obviously, the stuff has always been great with him. The command is there. He's obviously has a lot of trust in, you know, the catching staff with Kirk and Jansen, a lot of trust with the team. And I think that all the years that the Blue Jays have worked on him is kind of like just come together really nicely this year. And obviously it's very early, but this is the best he's looked probably in his career, the best couple start stretch that he's had. And, you know, again, it's early, but it wouldn't even surprise me if he can kind of surpass what he did last year, because it really feels like everything's come together very nicely for him. And, you know, give credit to the Blue Jays. Like, they saw a lot of potential in him, and I think they understood that it was going to be a process. It wasn't going to be an overnight change. And they invested in him. And it looks like that investment, while it took some time, is now paying off.
One investment they're not willing to take, though, I did suggest to someone recently that because, you know, Keegan Mathison wrote a story at MLB.com and Hazel May relayed it on the Sportsnet broadcast, that Kikuchi will bust out the top shelf Japanese whiskey after wins for the team. I suggested to someone that we turn this into, you know, hey, if you remember when Jays fans used to get a free slice of pizza if the team struck out seven batters that day, you know, we could do that. But if Kikuchi wins, we all go home with a shot of Japanese whiskey. Yeah. The team was not in favor of that. Maybe we have to go from top shelf to lower shelf. Caitlin, tonight, maybe the most interesting guy in the rotation is going to start. We saw Yariel Rodriguez last weekend. Really fun debut. Got a nice ovation from the Rogers Center crowd, despite being, you know, somewhat of an unknown. And you had a great piece about it. It called him poised, electric, passed on that he's not scared. You know, some insightful quotes from John Schneider and then as well as from Yariel Rodriguez through translator Hector LeBron. What are you looking for in his second time out? First time out was a lot of energy and positivity, and that seems to be, you know, maybe it's more energy and intensity than positivity day to day with Yariel. But what are you looking for his second time?
Well, it's going to be probably a tougher challenge. Obviously, you know, with due respect to the Rockies, they're not one of the top teams in the major leagues, and the Padres are a team that, you know, they're off to a pretty good start. They're a really interesting team. They've got a lot of really talented people on their team. And so I think, and it's a road game too, so that's always a challenge. So I'm interested to see how he attacks the Padres, how he goes about it, how his stuff plays in a different environment against the new team. But he does, like, it's, you know, it's one of those things where not all rookie pitchers are similar. Yeah. You know, he's a rookie technically, of course. This is his first season, but obviously he has a ton of experience. He's pitched in Cuba. He's pitched in international tournaments in the WBC. He's pitched in Japan. And so he's been a closer, I think, in Japan, or at least a high leverage reliever in Japan. And so he's had a ton of experience. And so I think that's going to be to his advantage, and that, like, I think John Schneider said something along the lines of, like, yes, he's kind of new in the majors, but he's well-traveled in baseball, basically. And so that's one thing I think that he can sort of lean on is that, again, tougher lineup, different atmosphere, but certainly things that he's probably experienced before, whether it's somewhere where he's pitching in Japan, whether it's an international tournament, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm interested to just see what he can do. It's the Blue Jays are in a position right now where they're kind of balancing short-term, you know, returns on him, because if he's pitching well, and he was pitching really well in AAA, it's like you want those outs in the major league, especially when you consider that he's going to be on some pitch limit this year, given that he didn't pitch last year professionally. And so you want to use all those bullets, so to speak, at the major league level if he can help you win. But also you have to think long term. This is a guy that they signed to a multi-year deal. This is a the guy that they could be part of the rotation of the future. And so you want to make sure you're treating him carefully this year. You don't want to overexert him. You don't want to overextend him. And so it's really interesting, like, how they're going to balance it. It's not really a question we have to answer now, but maybe in a couple weeks from now, like, Manoah might be ready. We're going to have to consider how do they use Yariel Rodriguez. But for now, he gets to start. I'm very interested to see how he handles that second start of his career.
Yeah, now there's some tape on him, and sure, the teams could look at AAA stuff or his Chinuchi Dragons stuff from over in Japan, but it's been a minute, so now there's actual Major League tape and Major League swings against it. Alek Manoah, by the way, starting for AAA Buffalo later today, his second start down there at AAA as he works his way potentially back, still on the IL right now. Caitlin, there was the other thing that strikes me about Yariel. I mentioned the intensity. There's also a confidence level there. You had this great quote, again, through translator Hector LeBron in your piece, and it was, well, what did you like best about your performance? And his answer was everything. Now, we obviously, we haven't gotten to know him that well yet, but it does seem like from early on in spring training when he arrived, he's a guy the fan base has been pretty excited about. And I know this is a smart fan base anyway, but what did you make of the fact that, hey, first career outing, relatively unknown guy at the major league level, gets a big ovation that seemed to like really mean something to him in his first start. And you know, obviously it was a good start, but like he came out in the fourth inning. It's not like he debuted with a no hitter or anything like that. What do you make of him being, you know, resonating with the Toronto Blue Jays fan base so early?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Toronto fan base has generally been good at treating especially the new players well and then being very welcoming. I think people understood the context of it. I think people understood, yes, shorter outing, but as you say, the fan base is educated. They sort of know this guy's on a pitch count or a pitch limit, so to speak. I think everybody knew the context of, like, you know, this is this guy's first career start in the major leagues, and it's, you know, it took a while to get here, right? He had to go through a lot coming from Cuba, you know, well-traveled, like I said before. And, you know, it was really nice. I like to see it. I think it was also opening homestand. I think, you know, a weekend series that was getting a lot of buzz. So it was really nice, and I think he really appreciated it. And he definitely strikes me as the type of pitcher that can be really well liked and appreciated by fans because he does seem to not shy away from emotions on the mound. I think there was a couple moments in the game where you could see him kind of like pumping his fist and getting really excited, and he's very intense, like, which is a good thing. I think I remember him saying in spring training, like, he loves starting because of, you know, the emotions of it. He's very intense about it. And I think that's also something that fans like to latch on to. You see that a little bit with, like, Kikuchi or Bassett. Like, they're very emotive. Actually, I mean, most of the Blue Jays pitchers are. Jose Brios can be very emotional on the mound, too. Gosman's probably the one guy that's, like, a little bit more stoic, but even he'll get, like, riled up sometimes. And I think that's usually when the fan base responds most to the pitchers. So yeah, I think Yariel can be really fun on the mound. He seems like he's going to be a really good balance of intensity, confidence, fun, like all these things. He's a different guy. Like, that's the thing that also pitcher said is, like, probably because of his time in Japan, he kind of pitches like Japanese pitchers do, obviously with a lot of different looks with his pitches. He has different ways that he can, I think, different release points, all this kind of stuff. So he's going to be, I think, an interesting guy to watch too.
Yeah, he's going to be a fascinating guy to try to analyze once we, you know, have more starts worth of numbers too, because it's going to be like, well, he's changing his arm angle, so it looks like his release point's all over the place, but it's intentional. And hey, right, sometimes he's using like this hitch in his leg to mess with the batter's timing, and sometimes he's not. It'll be a lot of fun to learn him the rest of the way. So a lot of positives with Yariel. If you were to, and this isn't a negative relative to him, but the way the roster is structured right now with a short pitch limit starter, we saw that come up a little bit in Wednesday's game where they didn't want to turn to Bowden Francis in the bullpen because ostensibly Bowden Francis is going to piggyback off of Yariel again tonight. You know, this is maybe less of an issue now. They're coming off of an off day. Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson have both had an appearance now back under their belt. They do have a couple of other multi-inning guys in Yenesis Cabrera and Trevor Richards. But for the time being, the cost of kind of tethering Bowden Francis to Yariel Rodriguez, is that something you see continuing past tonight, or could they maybe get to a place where they're more comfortable, hey, if Yariel can go 80 pitches, that frees us up to use Bowden a different night if we need him?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the early going seems to suggest that the Blue Jays like the pairing of having Yariel and then Bowden coming in after him. But as you say, like, that offers some limitations to how they can use their bullpen. Like, it feels like you're down a man in the bullpen, kind of, just if you're sort of trying to save him for the next day or 2 days from now or whatever. So there's probably some limitations to that, and I don't know that you could do that all season. I think that it would be kind of limiting, and that's why, like, Alek Manoah kind of looms, because Alek Manoah, if he's going good, he's a guy that can throw 100-plus pitches. That's who he's been over the course of his career, you know, outside of last year when he was obviously really struggling. And so the Blue Jays are probably better off, you know, as good as Yariel's stuff has looked, like, you're always going to be better off having just five kind of traditional starters in your rotation. And given the strength of the top four that Blue Jays have, even if Manoah is a tick down from where he was at his best, if he can still give you, you know, six innings, or at least keeps you in the game, I think you're a little bit better off with that. And then you make a decision, maybe you move Yariel to the bullpen and you keep him as a length bulk guy, and maybe Bowden goes down. He does have an option, obviously. And so I think that for now, while Yariel's in the rotation, you're going to see them probably use Bowden the way that they want to, which is behind him. But I think that in terms of, like, a long season strategy or a full season strategy, probably a little bit tricky to manage, especially when you get to, you know, the meat of the season, when you're playing, you know, 20 games in 21 days or whatever it is, and you're going to need everyone in your bullpen and all that kind of stuff. So for now, it's an easy solution, but I think going forward, it's probably not something they want to do. I think they'd be better off, and the Blue Jays in general have sort of favored more just having traditional rotations, as opposed to, like, you know, how the Rays do it, for example, where they're just, like, throwing guys in the rotation and cobbling things together. The Blue Jays have definitely skewed more into, like, they like just five solid guys that can, you know, pitch six innings plus.
And one of those teams has 40 guys on their 60-day IL, and one of them doesn't. I don't know if those things are directly related, but they might have some light correlation there. Caitlin, the way the bullpen looks right now is pretty good. I know Wednesday did not go well. They had a few guys down who weren't available. Eric Swanson and Tim Mazza both pitched poorly. We could talk about them individually, but big picture, they've added Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson back now. Both of those guys have an appearance under their belt. And after those guys, they have Jimmy Garcia, who has been electric. He's been unbelievable so far this season. Another person you wrote a great piece about the other day, saying he's on a different level right now. That's a quote from John Schneider. What is his role now that Romano and Swanson are back? Like, is Schneider, is he just kind of in this, hey, he's put out fires wherever there's leverage, you're gonna go, even if it's not the eighth and the ninth? Is that kind of the way you see Garcia being used from here?
I think so. I think he's their best alternate closer. So if Jordan's down, if Jordan's injured, if Jordan is unavailable, I think that Jimmy is the guy that you're looking at. I mean, at least ride him while he's hot right now. And I think that, as you say, he's going to, you see that in baseball where it's not so traditional anymore, and that, like, there's not necessarily an eighth inning guy and a seventh inning guy all the time. Lineups can dictate who goes where. And so I think that you're going to see Jimmy coming in, maybe if it's a high leverage situation in the sixth inning and it's the meat of the Yankees order, you know, the heart of the Dodgers order, whatever it may be, you're going to see him used at the most high leverage opportunities, to keep them in the game, whether sixth, seventh, eighth, probably not ninth, assuming Jordan's available. But I think that he's going to be, you know, a real important weapon for them, especially while he's pitching as well as he is right now. And I think that, yeah, it's puts the bullpen in a good spot, especially when, you know, you're still kind of waiting for Mazza to get back to, like, where he's been in the past. It's one outing for Eric Swanson, so I'm not going to sort of overreact to that. Obviously, it was a tough spot to put in a guy in coming back from the IL, and the Yankees are a tough lineup to get through. Chad Green, I guess we're going to wait and see how he is. You're hoping that he's obviously not dealing with any serious injury. It was just sort of a nagging shoulder or whatever it is. But, yeah, I mean, the way that Jimmy is pitching right now, I mean, he was receiving tons of praise from his from his teammates. He's kind of like the guy that everybody's talking about on the Blue Jays right now. I mean, maybe it's him and Kikuchi in terms of just like guys that have really come out, and Berríos, I guess. But, you know, Bassett said something along the lines of Jimmy's the best reliever right now. And Tim Mays has told me, like, he's pitching so well, he'd probably go out there with his eyes closed and know where the ball's going. And, you know, John Schneider had some great quotes on him. Pete Walker's been praising him. And, you know, people have been talking about Jimmy for months now. Back in spring, it was like there was a real buzz about him. Like, everyone's talking about how good he looked, how in shape and how in form he was very early on. And we're definitely seeing, I mean, obviously he's throwing harder than he ever has. He's locating his stuff. He's got a new sweeper pitch that's been a real weapon for him too. And so he's got like the full package right now. And you know, he's, if he stays as effective as he is, I mean, he could be like kind of the MVP out of the bullpen, the way that I think maybe for the first half you had like Trevor Richards last year, that was kind of like the unsung hero a little bit in the bullpen. And I think Jimmy kind of could be that guy this year.
And it also lets you shift Trevor Richards back into that first half of last year role, being a multi-inning guy and kind of that pseudo extra lefty. Because of the way his changeup works against platoon splits. Quickly before I let you go, Caitlin, you said you're not concerned with Swanson. It's just one outing back from the IL. Any concern level with Meza? The velocity down on the sinker, almost 2 miles an hour. He's had a couple shaky outings right now. I know he has a long track record here that they're probably going to trust, but is that on your radar much or still too early?
That is on my radar a little bit, just because you see the velocity down. He had a bit of a weird spring too. I think his spring didn't go so well, and I feel like there was times when he was pitching on a backfield as opposed to a major league game. That's always a bit of a signal, like, is the guy trying to work on stuff? You know, maybe the team doesn't want him pitching in a major league environment as he's working on things. And so I think that it's been a little bit enough of a sample size now where you're just not seeing him look as sharp as he was. And I think that, you know, the Blue Jays say they're not concerned, but anytime a velo drop exists, you get a little concerned, especially with a reliever. Mays has been obviously incredible for the last couple of years for them and been a real huge piece for their bullpen. You know, I don't know what's up. I mean, is it an injury? I doubt it's an injury, or certainly like not a serious injury. But you have to wonder like what's going on with him. Again, like it could just be a bad first month. But he's been so consistent the last couple of years that it feels odd. And I get why the Blue Jays are going with him. He's been a guy that has been reliable for them. He's been, you know, one of their best relievers, obviously one of their best left-handed relievers, one of their only left-handed relievers. So you want to stick with him. But also, you know, I don't know that if his outings continue the way they have, that you can necessarily trust him in those big spots, at least right now. So, you know, maybe there is something going on. Maybe there's some shoulder fatigue, some arm fatigue, dead arm. I don't know what's happening. So it's definitely something that to monitor, I think, for them.
It's definitely worth monitoring, and it's also a good reminder for the Nate Pearsons of the world that, hey, things change quickly and you're going to need more than just 8 relievers over the course of the year, whether by performance or injury or anything like that. Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic, thank you for taking the time out this morning. Keep up all the great work.
Yes, thank you.
Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic, again, you can go check her stuff out over at The Athletic like you do every season. Really good stuff up on Jimmy Garcia, on Yusei Kikuchi, on Kevin Gausman, back to his last start on Yariel Rodriguez. Caitlin's just been on fire through this homestand. Excuse me. Another piece to push you to, by the way, Shai Davidi of Sportsnet.ca has a really great Yariel piece up this morning ahead of his second start as well, that goes into some of, you know, what he was feeling coming out of his first start, what he's feeling going into his second one, and just a good quote that underlies the confidence with Yariel Rodriguez. So this is Shai writing, says, to that end, pitching in the majors, quote, feels normal right now, says the 27-year-old. This is what I wanted all my life. It feels great. This is the sport I want to play, and it feels normal. Very cool to be up in the major leagues after years of trying to get there, and you're just like, yeah, this feels normal. I was built for this. This is what I've been working toward. It's a lot of fun to see a guy carry that kind of confidence around. I mentioned with Caitlin there, our only real minor league update today is that Alec Manoah is starting at AAA Buffalo today as he continues to try to work his way back. Hopefully the mechanics, the delivery are a little more consistent than we saw last time out. Aurelvis Martinez did homer again yesterday. I joked about that earlier, but a day after he had a 470-foot grand slam, he homered again. He's been red hot down there, so that's an interesting thing to keep an eye on as well. The only other update I have for you is a very weird one, and it's that the FAA and United are investigating the Colorado Rockies because on their flight from Denver to Toronto, one of their coaches was in the pilot's chair in the cockpit, and it got posted somewhere, and that is very much not allowed. You're allowed to visit the cockpit, but you are not allowed to sit in the pilot's chair, and, you know, obviously you're not flying the plane, but you that's where the pilot's supposed to sit. So they're being investigated. There's a story up about that right now that you can find, a bit of a bizarre one. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get to know this San Diego Padres team a little bit better. And we're going to talk some knuckleballs with Kyle Glazer of MLB.com. That's next as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Happy Taylor Swift Day to those who celebrate. Thanks to Caitlin McGrath for coming on with us and talking the Jays side of this weekend series. We're going to do the Padres side of this weekend series now. We're joined by Kyle Glazer, formerly of Baseball America, of MLB.com. Kyle, thanks for joining, man. How are you?
Doing good. Glad to be back on with you, Blake.
Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate it. The Padres here, a little spiritually similar to the Blue Jays. It feels like tough 2023. The Jays managed to get to the playoffs. The Padres never quite turned it around. A bit of a weird offseason in terms of direction for both of those franchises. And then both off to an okay start. Jays are 10-9. Padres are 11-10. Where are the Padres kind of big picture in the post-Juan Soto year here?
Yeah, they're kind of straddling the line a little bit between they have this group of veterans that they want them to perform at a level that can lead them to the postseason now, but they're also starting to integrate some of their younger players. We saw Jackson Merrill come up, make the team as the opening day center fielder. Graham Pauly made the opening day roster. He's back down in AAA. But I will say Jackson Merrill in particular has given this team a little bit of an injection of energy. Last year's team, just for lack of a better word at times, looked a little bit like they were sleepwalking. There was a lack of enthusiasm. They got booed off the field a few times just because it was very, very clear they were not really into it. Merrill's been a really, really nice youthful presence in this clubhouse. The players have talked about it. He's very mature. He handles all the postgame questions well. He's playing a great center field. He's doing really, really well in the batter's box, not just statistically, but the quality of his at-bats, the maturity level is really impressive. So right now, again, is this Padres team a true contender? We'll find out. There are some roster holes here. But at the same time, there does seem to be this nice blend of youth as well as veterans, where last year it was a veteran-heavy team and it didn't go great.
Yeah, and look, Jackson Merrill, he turns 21 today. This is how young a player we're talking about, not even 2 years removed from his draft. And I know that, or 3 years removed from his draft, rather, the 2021 draft. And I know that that's old hat now. We've got prospects coming up in the same draft year, and Nolan Schanuel, and we've got guys coming to the majors really, really quickly. But you mentioned the approach, and, you know, for him to have a double-digit walk rate, to not be striking out very much, you know, sure, the batting average on balls in play is probably going to come down. Pitchers are going to figure him out and find some holes, etc. But when you look at who this kid could be long term for the Padres, how high does that rank? You've done a lot of prospect stuff over the years. You were at Baseball America for like 8 years. Someone having this refined of approach and the bat to ball skill to take advantage of it at just 21, how high are you on that translating to a really good long term career here?
I'm very high on it. I was part of Baseball America's top 100 this year, as I have been for the last 8 years. We ranked him number 12 coming into the season. I've seen him since he was at Class A Lake Elsinore. And you have to remember, he was kind of a surprise first round pick back the first round out of Maryland. Wasn't a big showcase circuit kid. Was not a guy that by any means was considered a slam dunk first rounder. But as soon as he got out to Lake Elsinore, you saw maturity to his game. He was hanging in, keeping that front shoulder closed left on left. He was playing a very fundamentally sound shortstop, which you don't really see at low A. A lot of times it's guys who are flashy but don't have the fundamentals down. Made his way up to Fort Wayne, and then you really saw him start to blossom physically last year when he showed up at the Futures game. It was like, wow, this kid's really going in the right direction. And now it's all coming together. He's blossoming physically. He's kept that mature approach really on both sides of the ball. You have to remember, he had not really played the outfield much before becoming the Padres' opening day center fielder this year. He's a shortstop. And for him to adjust this quickly to a position change without having any drawback in his hitting ability, his approach, it is really, really remarkable. I think this is who Jackson Merrill is, a mature, steady, heady ball player who's going to be fundamentally sound. You add that to blossoming physicality, he's only going to keep getting better.
Lake Elsinore Storm, you mentioned, by the way, best hats in minor league baseball, the angry eyes on the cap there. With respect to position, look, I no one is out of position forever. We've seen that with Mookie Betts. Obviously, Ha-Sung Kim's been playing most of the shortstop here for the Padres. Is that a long-term move, Merrill moving to center field? Is there potential he ends up back in the infield?
Some of it's going to depend on what happens with Ha-Sung Kim. He'll be a free agent after this season, and whether or not the Padres can re-sign him. He has he's in line for a big payday, and the Padres, it's no secret, have a lot of very, very, very high payroll players. When you look at Fernando Tatis, you look at Xander Bogaerts, you look at Manny Machado, you look at Yu Darvish, you look at Joe Musgrove, they had to cut some payroll this past year. Their owner, Peter Seidler, tragically died. He was really leading the charge of running up the payroll. Now that he's gone, we don't really know what the new owner, Eric Kutsenda, wants to do. But given what took place this year, the payroll cutting, we have to see what they do with Ha-Sung Kim. And a lot of that's going to end up affecting Jackson Merrill. If Ha-Sung Kim leaves in free agency, you look at the Padres, their major and minor league system right now, there's not really an obvious shortstop candidate. Again, Xander Bogaerts has already moved to second base. He's not really moving well enough to be a shortstop anymore. So we could see Merrill come back into the infield at shortstop if Kim leaves. But again, that'll be sorted out after the season.
And hey, in the interim, people thought that the Padres weren't going to have enough outfield players heading into this year is one of the criticisms. And then who knew? Jerks and Profar, MVP candidate. And look, I could joke about Profar, and he's obviously going to come down to earth. But obviously what they've done here, moving Bogaerts down the defensive spectrum, plugging Merrill into center field, this is a team that right now, and it's very early, but they're number one in outs above average defensively. They're one of only two teams better than the Blue Jays, who led the league last year. I mean, how much of that is, I guess, just, this is more of a like traditionalist question, but this is a team that, despite some of the flaws last year and some of the things you mentioned about, you know, hey, was the energy level there last year and things like that, they barely strike out relative to Major League Baseball. They're one of the best base running teams in the league, and they're one of the best defensive teams. I guess just how much does that insulate their floor where, hey, the lows of last year aren't as likely, maybe, because you're hitting the stuff you can control. They're controlling really well.
Well, they were a great defensive team last year, too, and it didn't really insulate them. It's really going to come down to injuries in the starting rotation. There's not a lot of pitching depth here. As soon as, you know, Joe Musgrove or Yu Darvish, if they suffer an injury, and we have seen them struggle with that in recent years, they're going to be in a little bit of trouble. The back of this lineup, again, there's some guys off to good starts. Jerickson Profar has been great. He's always been a little bit of an X factor for the Padres. So while he won't continue hitting what he's hitting, I think he'll still be a positive contributor. But you get down to that 7, 8, 9 spot in the lineup, it's still a little sketchier than you might like. So I think it's really going to come down to, do the starting pitchers stay healthy, and can they go make an addition at the trade deadline to kind of fortify this lineup? Again, will those things happen? Only time will tell. But this isn't going to be a bad team. This is a team that should win 82, 83, 84 games. If they catch a few breaks, maybe they get to 86, 87. And if their starting pitchers stay healthy, and if they're able to make a fortification to their lineup at the deadline, maybe they do start sneaking into the 90 win range.
You mentioned pitcher injuries. Yu Darvish just hit the IL. There's a TBD on the probable pitcher list for Saturday. Do you have a sense of if they're headed for a bullpen day, or if there's someone they would maybe call up for a spot start in that game?
Not yet. I'm going to be down there covering the series today, so I'll have an answer for you at about 3 p.m. Pacific, but as of right now, I don't.
Okay, but we do know who's starting Friday, and we know who's starting Sunday. Let's start with tonight. So it's a really, really fun matchup. I don't know if you got to see Yariel Rodriguez's first outing with the Blue Jays, but he was a ton of fun, looked really good, and he'll go up against Matt Waldron. We got a knuckleballer back in the league, and it's not like, hey, I'm going to throw one or two here and there to mix you up. Matt Waldron's throwing that knuckleball 36% of the time. I guess we could talk the specifics of it, but how much fun is it for you to get to cover a knuckleballer? Like, there's a knuckleballer back. It's really cool.
It's a blast. I wrote a big feature on Matt Waldron, actually, at the end of last year, and his success is directly tied to his knuckleball usage. If you look historically, since he's come up to the majors, the more he throws the knuckleball, the better he is. You know, he's got a mid-90s fastball. It's not like he's a Tim Wakefield guy who just throws knuckleballs. He can throw you a knuckleball, come back with a low 90s fastball, speed you up a little bit. He's got a breaking ball. In a vacuum, that fastball, breaking ball, they're not special pitches, but when he mixes them in effectively with the knuckleball, it's really, really, really tough for hitters to stay on time against him because they don't know what's coming. And when that knuckleball works, it really works. His last start against the Dodgers, I was there covering it. Gavin Stone taking a perfect game into the sixth inning, got most of the attention. Matt Waldron went 5 innings, 3 hits, 1 run against a really good Dodgers lineup, had Mookie Betts swinging through that knuckleball, Freddie Freeman swing through that knuckleball. It's a real pitch, and it works for him. So he's a real solid back-of-the-rotation guy who really has stepped up in an area of need for the Padres.
So that's the feature you wrote was in September at Baseball America. People could go check it out. Padres Matt Waldron is bringing the knuckleball back to MLB, and you spoke to him about this. I guess how much of the challenge for him, and I don't know if you've asked him this specifically or gotten a sense, is, you know, traditionally when you think of how a knuckleball is going to be released, especially if Tim Wakefield is your example, right? Like, you could tell it's going to be a knuckleball coming, right? Like, the arm angle and the arm speed are a little different than a regular pitch. How critical is that for him to be able to disguise the knuckleball a little bit, or at least not make it as obvious as a traditional knuckleball only pitcher might?
It's huge, and that's the biggest thing. There are actually a couple of guys in the minor leagues I covered over the years who'd experiment with knuckleballs. You could see it coming. They'd slow their arms down. You could see it out of the hand, and they didn't really have a good sense of where it was going. Matt Waldron is in a really, really good job. He only picked this pitch up in the minors. He was kind of messing around with a minor league teammate, playing catch, throwing a knuckleball, and a Padres coordinator saw it and said, hey, throw that again. And then they liked what they saw. They put it up on some of their data analytics. They really liked it. They started throwing it in spring training, and voila, he had a new pitch. So for a guy who only really started throwing knuckleball 3-4 years ago, to be able to sell it like he does, have the control of it that he does, it's really, really impressive. And look, it's a carrying pitch that has helped him be successful in Major League Baseball and should continue to.
Well, hopefully it is something you can pick up and continue to develop through the minors. The Blue Jays had Ari Dickey in spring training in camp. They have two minor leaguers, Ryan Chass and I guess Jordan Powell is now with the Astros, but at the time was with the Blue Jays, who were trying around with it a little bit. So that'll be a lot of fun. That'll be a lot of fun to see. It's also, I wonder how much it's just a perfect fit for him to be in Petco, because at least, again, to go back to the Wakefield and R.A. Dickey, who we saw here a lot, as the example, you know, when you miss on a knuckleball, that thing can fly, but Petco is the number 29 ballpark in baseball in terms of fly balls leaving. This is a Padres team that they have not prioritized keeping the ball on the ground with their pitching staff anyway. Waldron kind of serendipitous fit with the Padres being a knuckleball guy?
I think it works in a lot of ways. Look, he gets 81 home games a year in Petco. Obviously, he's not starting all of them, but he also has, you know, Padres play 10-plus road games a year at Dodger Stadium, which is pitcher-friendly, especially at night. The ball does not fly there. Another 10 road games a year in San Francisco. So there's no question. When you're in the NL West, you know, Colorado, Arizona, the ball flies, but for the most part, most of his starts are going to come in pitcher-friendly parks where the balls don't fly out. That does help. At the same time, look, a knuckleball is a famously temperamental pitch. We see lots of guys struggle to control. You see lots of wild pitches. You see some pass balls. As you mentioned, if you make a mistake, it's gone. He's done a really good job of controlling it, being able to use it in the right places at the right time. So I do think this is a real pitcher who I think would have success really anywhere, especially in the modern day. I talked to a couple hitters about this last year. They're not seeing knuckleballs in the amateur circuit. They're not seeing knuckleballs in the minors. Almost anyone in the game today, 28, 29 and younger, has maybe faced a knuckleball once or twice in their entire life. It's such an unfamiliar pitch. That lack of familiarity really throws a big wrinkle in there. I do think he'd be successful outside of Petco, but there's no question playing for the Padres, playing as many games as they do in Petco, in Dodger Stadium at night, in San Francisco, it's certainly an added benefit.
Can't wait to talk to some of these Jays hitters when they're back off the road about what facing Waldron was like. On Sunday, the Jays will see Joe Musgrove. Obviously, a long track record of Joe Musgrove being very good. He's off to a rough start here, kind of across the board. Strikeouts are down, the walks are up, the ground ball rate's decreased. There's a little bit of a velo dip, but not much. Like it's kind of the standard early season velocity. He's not all the way back yet. He's throwing his fastballs a little bit less often, but everyone is doing that. So I haven't been able to diagnose, and I say this as a heavily leveraged Joe Musgrove fantasy owner as well. I would like to know after Sunday what he can do to get back in the right direction. What have you seen from Musgrove so far?
Yeah, you know, again, the stuff just hasn't been as crisp since he suffered his injury last year. And we have to see, is that just rust? He missed a lot of time. He's kind of getting back into the swing of things. Or is there something more lasting here? And that's a big question the Padres and their fans want answers to. And we don't have them yet. I think the longer his struggles go on, the more and more concern is going to be raised. But look, it's April 19th. It's still very, very early in the season. He's still working his way back into form after suffering his injury last year and missing all the time he did. So no one's hitting the panic button yet, but we do need to see if the stuff gets a little bit crisper across the board. That's really going to be the main thing to watch for.
In that Padres bullpen behind them, they made two international signings in the offseason that looked like a lot of fun. Yuki Matsui's been really good so far with an ERA below one, even though he's not a high strikeout guy. Woosuk Goh went to the minors, but he's been very, very good down there. How do those two figure in? You know, I'd assume we'll probably see Goh at some point this year as well as Matsui.
Yeah, so Matsui has already established himself as a mid to high leverage reliever. Most evaluators I spoke to, look, the stuff is there. He's got electric stuff from the left side, weapons he got both sides. This isn't a guy who is going to be a lefty specialist. It's real, real stuff, three pitches. The issue with him is just control. He's a smaller guy. It's max effort. There are times the fastball sails on him. So because of those control issues, a lot of evaluators wondered, would he be better in a low to mid leverage situation? Because look, nothing is worse than a guy comes in the seventh, eighth, or even ninth inning and starts walking the yard. But so far, he's been okay. And we'll just have to see how he maintains that over the course of the year. But he has the stuff to continue being a prime setup type for Robert Suarez there in the seventh, eighth. Woosuk Goh, it's a great fastball. The secondaries are a little bit lacking. They need development. And so that's a big reason why he's down in the minors. Sharpen those secondaries, see if they can improve. Look, we all see over the course of the season, especially once we get into the dog days of summer, some injuries hit. Bullpen shuttle is going full speed. So I do think we'll see him at some point in the majors. Again, his fastball will play against big league hitters. It's just about having a breaking ball, a reliable, consistent breaking ball. He flashes a good one, but it's not consistent. Making it more consistent to give him a second weapon to really, really help him be effective against the best hitters in the world.
All right. Really quick before I let you go here, Kyle. So you went to Arizona State. Did you play baseball? Yes.
I did, but not at ASU. I was not nearly good enough for that.
Okay. I was wondering just because like when I searched Kyle Glazer Baseball America to bring up your writer feed, but they also have a prospect page for you. And I didn't know if it was just like they were doing a bit because I couldn't find stats for you.
They actually were doing a test. Okay. I remember when I first was hired by Baseball America as part of the onboarding, they were training me how to use their database, and they had me make a player card for myself as part of the testing. And I guess someone forgot to delete it. But yeah, no, I did play growing up. I had some opportunities to go play D3 ball, but ASU when I was there, 06 to 10, that was Mike Leake, Brett Wallace, Ike Davis, Jason Kipnis, Cole Calhoun, Austin Barnes. I mean, I was there during the peak years. I did do the walk-on tryouts and made it to the second day. So I'll take that as a win, but no, I was nowhere near good enough to play with those guys.
And just full disclosure, I am not the Blake Murphy that was a catcher in the Cardinals system a few years ago either and was a 42nd round draft pick. That was not me. Kyle Glazer, thanks for taking the time, man. Keep up the great work everywhere. You're all over the place.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Blake.
Kyle Glazer of MLB.com, Padres.com right now. Also, I said formerly Baseball America, but he was writing there very, very recently, the top 100 prospect list. He's also one of the guys who this is probably, if you are covering a team, as I am, one of the most useful things Baseball America does is they go into guys outside of their top 30 as well. And like, hey, you should know this guy. This is what you're looking for this guy to maybe break into the top 30. Kyle didn't do the Blue Jays section of that. Our boy Jeff Ponce did, but very, very useful. He was kind of their West Coast guy. So if you're interested in the NL West teams, the West Coast-based teams, and some of their prospect system depth, especially how the Padres stack up after the Juan Soto trade, it's fascinating to talk about, you know, their direction and their potential budget, you know, whether there's room there or whether they continue to need to trim salary, because they do have a restocked system a little bit after that trade that they could maybe get in there, but also maybe they go in the other direction if things aren't going well, as some thought they might last year. Fascinating series ahead all around. Yariel Rodriguez against Matt Waldron, the knuckleballer, tonight. Jose Berríos against TBD tomorrow at 8:40. Chris Bassett against Joe Musgrove in the finale at 4:10 on Sunday. All three of those games, of course, on Sportsnet with Dan Buck and Hazel, Ben Schulman and Chris LaRue with the call for you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Blair and Barker coming at you 2 to 4 a little bit later, and it'll be Shoa Ali with you for Jays Talk postgame. Coming up, Gord Stellick in for Jeff Merrick, talking all things Stanley Cup playoffs. Have a great weekend, everyone.